MFT architect assisting on the product team. With that being said, so for anyone that is here for the first time, as Jeff mentioned, this is an it is a question answer session. So you unmute yourself, ask a question. I already have two in the chat, so that's what we'll start with. If we're talking on a topic you're interested in, just chime in. If you're doing something similar, if you have a follow-up question, the idea is to talk. Another thing is that, as you noticed, it's in a different time compared to what we usually do. We're experimenting at the moment. So for a while, you'll be seeing both meetings at the regular time and at this later slot. And we had a matching earlier slot one late last week for the East Coast and Europe. So after the meeting ends, if you have to tell us something about the timing and do you think it was a good time and what time would you rather this meeting be, just let us know. We're trying to find the best time for everyone. With that being said, let's kick it off. And as I said, I already have questions in the chat. If you cannot unmute yourself for whatever reason, feel free to just put it in chat, but I would much rather talk to you, and chances are I'll still ask you a follow-up question. So just typing usually doesn't cut it, but if needed, we can work with that. So with that being said, let's start with Nai and the question. We have a set of file extensions that are not allowed into ST. However, if they zip a file and send it over and we unzip it, deliver it out. So all the restrictions we have for files are on the inbound side. So if they circumvent it by going with a zip file and we unzip, the only way to stop it from delivering is to make a condition on the send to partner. Oh, I forgot to mention, I have a live server, so I'll just pop up on my server to show you what I mean. So in the template that you are sending with, and it will need to be advanced routing because in template or composite route, but it will need to be advanced routing because basic application doesn't have conditions. But over here, when you're doing your delivery, the send to partner, whoops, I clicked on the wrong thing. So what you'll need to do is when you're adding the step, the last one, the send to partner or publish to account, whatever you are doing after the unzip, you will need to either do a condition, which says, if this is the extension, just don't deliver. So basically repeating the whole set of extensions that you don't want to deliver with. Or if you are on an older version of ST, or if it is just patterns, you can also do file globbing regular expression over here on the file name pattern, because that's what it is based on. But one of the two will need to be enabled. ST will not protect delivery out based on the inbound restrictions. Does this make sense, Nai?
Good morning. Yes, that does make sense. Thank you.
Yeah, and it will need to be one by one, unfortunately, right? We cannot just, there is nothing on the outbound side like we have the restrictions on the user class on the inbound. So, okay.
How do you put in a condition where I have multiple file extensions in there?
Okay, back to the server. The easiest way, I will do it from here, and it's a full-blown expression. So you do extension transfer dot target. Not equal dot x and so on and so forth. Blah, 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 blah. So you just do it this way, or you can do it if there are too many of them, and you also can do matching and replacing. So you can grab the extension and check if it matches with the standard regex that has the slashes, the this character, I don't know the name of it, this character between them. So there are multiple ways to do it, but this is a full-blown expression. So you can have as many as you want. So if how many extensions do you have?
Maybe around 20 or so.
Okay, in this case, I'll probably do something like this. And then to lowercase to make sure that, you know, they don't trick you with capital letters for whatever reason. And then extension. And then transfer.target, unless you are inside of a trigger subscription. In this case, you know, it will be different. But basically, grab the extension, make it to lowercase, and then matches. And then in the matches, you can do extension one. And remember that the extension returns the dot at the beginning. So you can either do a substring to remove the first character, or just leave it like that. And then on the matches, you have .ext. Oops. .*.exe or .*.bin and so on and so on and so on, and then close everything at the very end. And this will match the files that match this, and you don't want it to match, so you just put the no at the beginning. So, you know, standard way.
Okay.
But so something like that. And this will not work, obviously, exactly like it's written, but that's the idea. Build your regex that matches. Right?
Yeah, so if I need an uppercase, then I wanted to do another condition to go with that.
Yes, but because those are extensions, you don't care about the case, and that's why I called to lowercase, so that it will make the extension into lowercase. So this means that if the person uses exe with a capital X, small e, whatever, it will put it down. This to lowercase at the beginning, that's why I added it here, to make sure that what comes from the file is to a lowercase.
Is there a global setting at all, or does it have to be individually for all of this? I mean, every file that we're unzipping has to go through this.
Yeah, for the outbound, it will need to be individually immediately after every unzip.
Oh.
Yep. Sorry.
I'm going to need a request to make this a global thing then.
Yes, open an idea. What you are asking for is outbound restrictions.
All right, thank you.
Yep, matching the inbound. And yes, if they upload the file, you will not even allow it. You will not process it, right? But if it was inside of a zip or inside of PGP or something like that, we don't know until we grab it from inside. So,
okay. Thank you.
Edie, I can see you, but I have a couple more before you.
Okay. It's a follow-up to this one.
Go ahead.
So what would the expression be if it's if there's no extension on the file?
Oh, the way I would do it, okay, so I cannot get to the chat and share for some reason today. So what I would do in this case is matches. Hold on. So let me clean up that a little bit so that it's easier to see. So extension transfer.target and then matches. You know what I'll do? Actually, I'll do a replace instead if I'm looking for a no. So replace. So at the moment, if you have no extension, this will be just empty. Otherwise, it's dot something. So, and then I will replace that with, actually, what I'll do. Hold on. So concat, a random character, it doesn't matter what character it is, and then followed by the extension, right? So at the moment, if you look at this string, did I close my brackets? One bracket close, second, yeah. So at the moment, so this will either be the letter R or R dot something, if there was an extension, right? And then all I need to do is to see if this equal R, like that. So if this expression here returned the letter R, then the extension was empty. We do have an empty, technically, we do have a function that checks if a string is empty, but it doesn't check for nulls. I think here using the empty will also work, but I'm a little old. I forced it into. Make sense, Edie?
Yes, I captured that. Thank you.
Yep. And where I saw, so this is equal. You can also do standard match with an expression. You can do it in a lot of different ways. It's basically comparing two strings, and we have multiple functions for that. So, but again, also look at, if you look at the documentation, there is also an empty function, and you can pass that if you don't do the concat. From years of writing code, I'm just used to, I much prefer to do it that way. Concatenate so that I force it into a string always, so I don't worry, is it a null, is it empty, whatever it is. And then compare it. And if it returns just whatever thing I put at the beginning, that's it. So, okay.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Good. Okay. Mishra. If that's the first or last name, I apologize. Sometimes I'm bad with that. We all know that if you had been here before. We're planning to migrate all the users' logins to external IDP, and you don't want a big bang. Well, that's very easy to do because in the world of... So your current, all your users at the moment are local in ST, right? Let's assume yes, unless they can unmute themselves. So in the world of ST, there is a checkbox on the account that says if the password is kept locally or not. And back to my server. So when you go to the account, okay, my server is being temperamental. But on the account, when you set up the account, there is a checkbox that says if the password is stored locally. So for any account you are ready to migrate, all you need is to go to uncheck it, which will put it on the external path. So when this user tries to authenticate, they will come in. Now, there is one exception. Let's see. There is one exception to that rule, and this is when you say IDP, are we talking about SAML? Because if you go for SAML, the forwarder itself becomes unconditional because it's happening before we know who the account is. So if you need HTTP users to be able to use both, okay, either my VPN or my server doesn't like me at the moment, I'll look at it later. But if you have users that will, if you need your HTTPS users to be able to go SAML or not SAML, you'll need two listeners or different ports for them because of the way the SAML forwarder works. It goes before we know who the user is. Make sense? Thanks, Chris. Yes, the character I couldn't remember the name of was Pipe. Okay, so that was about the migration. It's if you need to go the way with a double listener on the HTTP, it will be a different port. So one of the two groups of users will need to change the port, but it's not impossible. Hey. Okay, Olga, is it possible to have more than one email contact in the email account email field? No, unfortunately. The email field is one mail only. Part of it is because we're also using it for authentication during ad hoc operations and for finding the users when you use ad hoc or a system to user delivery. So it will probably never become multiple mails. However, you can use additional parameters on the account level or on the flow level with additional emails that then can be called in different situations like notifications or whatever you need it to be in. If you need all the mails to the standard mail to go to multiple users, you will need to do groups on your mail server instead of ST. But in ST, it's one mail per user.
Thank you, Annie.
Yep. What is your use case, Olga? Or do you, why do you need two mails? Or more? Just for general notification purposes?
No, it's not general notification purpose. It's just that some of our clients have more than one point of contact. So they wanted both those contacts to be notified. I tried it today. It didn't allow me to. And I said, okay. I'll throw it in there.
So what I would do is leave the email in the mail field, whichever you want to leave, because this is the one they'll maybe use to reset their password, for example. But then inside of every of notifications, instead of using account.mail, use this variable account.uservars get attribute.
Annie, I think I'm losing you. I don't know if it's on my side. Maybe the forum can help me because I can't hear you anymore. Can you hear me? Am I audible?
Yeah. I can hear you. I think she's coming in and out for some reason.
Yes, coming in and out.
Sorry, can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Yes, I can hear you now. Now you are gone again.
Now we lost you.
I think she's got connectivity issues. The VPN.
Annie?
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yep. Sorry. Yeah, sorry about that. My VPN is making problems. That's why I lost the server as well. So I was just saying that when did you lose me, Olga? Because I was trying to explain how to work with multiple mails.
Yes, it was at the point where you were talking about using multiple mails.
Yep. So you basically put them in the additional parameter under the user vars. And then when you build your templates and routes, instead of using account.mail, you use account.attributes, user vars.notificationmails. That way you still have the single mail into the email field because that's what is used for resetting passwords and things like that. But you can send everything, all the notifications to multiple people. And you can even do a condition like in the field, you can check if the email is, if this variable is empty, and if it is empty, then grab the email. And if it's not empty, use those. Something like that. Everywhere where you type account.mail, instead of typing account.mail, you can do account.attributes, user vars dot whatever mail you have, whatever notification mails is empty, then use account.mail, otherwise use this with a conditional.
Annie, are you able to demonstrate that? Do you think you have time, or maybe you can pop me an email if it's okay with you?
Yes, and as soon as I manage to get back on my other device, I'm on my phone at the moment, just with an audio, unfortunately. I lost the VPN on the laptop, and I need that for the server. So if I manage to recover that in the next few minutes, I'll try to show it on the screen. If not, drop me a message and I'll send you in a mail the expression that I'm talking about.
Much
it's pretty straightforward. Yep, it's just a conditional. If you have never done those, this is this expression with the question mark and the column. So.
Much appreciated. Thank you so much.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Okay. So let me see. Of course, we'll have troubles. At least my chat is alive, which means I still can have the questions. Okay, so back to where we started, single mail per account, simply because we use it for various purposes, not just for notifications, including resetting passwords and logins on ad hoc. So that's why it's a single mail over there. Okay. Okay. Why is the use case where we need both condition and file name pattern both in the route step? Why would you need both a pattern and the condition? The condition can do patterns as well. So what I don't know if you can have both at the same time. I haven't ever tried, quite honestly, because if I'm going to write a condition, I would always just put it over there. Any file name pattern can be written as an expression. So if I need to go expressions, I'll just do that. I'll go file pattern only if I don't need otherwise a condition. But it's an interesting question, so I'll go play it this afternoon on my server.
I could not think of any use case where I would use that. Like condition, we never use it. If I need to use the condition, I'll probably use it at the route step itself, right? In the main route. So I always wonder, because this was introduced rather recently. So
technically speaking, anything you can do with the patterns can be done with the condition. We just didn't want to remove the patterns before. The patterns is the older concept. So way back when we had only the patterns. Now that we have the condition, yes, anything you can do with a pattern, you can do with the condition. But it's more readable if you do it with a pattern sometimes. So, and there is backward compatibility to think of. So if you're asking why we didn't remove it, well, we didn't want to change everyone's routes and practices. Plus, if you're technical, writing a condition is very easy. If you're not that technical, writing something like star.txt is a lot easier than trying to figure out how to do that as an expression, right? So that's all this is all about.
Okay, thank you.
Plus, especially because we're talking about, so especially the globbing session. So if you're doing regular expression down in your pattern, then I would strongly advise you to go to condition instead anyway. But if you're doing globbing is a lot cleaner to write sometimes and a lot easier, and it works differently. So if you have too many files coming from a zip, for example, a globbing will be faster than a regex, simply because of the way OS level works. But not by much, not enough to make a difference. So for the time being, technically speaking, you can just stay on the conditions and just stay there. So, okay. Chris, can you have a distribution list email if you are not using ad hoc? Yes and no. Can you put it in there? Sure. But if this user tries to reset their password, if we keep local passwords and we allow them to reset, they will need to have to be able, they'll need to know which mail is there, and won't be theirs. So we don't care if the mail you put in the email field is individual or a group or, you know, a forwarder that sends to everyone in your company. It's just what we're using it for. So. And it doesn't even need to be unique. So we have a parameter on the server that allows even for ad hoc, that allows for non-ad hoc. If you don't use ad hoc, if you just do password resets, allows you to for us to ask also for the username on a password reset, so that you have a username and a mail, and then we can find the user. So it depends on the use cases. The field is always one mail. Is it a distribution list or not? It's up to you. We do have some, I've seen a couple of accounts where they're doing exactly that. They have distribution mails in their Exchange server. So every single mail they put in ST is actually a distribution list. So, make sense? Okay, I think I might have a server. So let me just check it quickly. If it restored itself. Okay. While I'm looking at the server, what else do I'm out of questions on the chat. So, or at least I don't see any more. Let me see. Yep, I don't see any more questions. So, we have so. Other questions? No questions?
Hey, Annie, this is Maurita.
Yep. Hey.
Hey, not sure if this is the right forum to ask, but for the API part, is there a way we can like if I pull the different parts of the API, right? Like the account, subscription, transfer sites, and routes. Is there a specific field that I can pinpoint that link all these three these types of report and be able to link them together, like an ID or a field that is present on all these on all those reports?
Unfortunately, not really. There are IDs that you can link one to the next one, but there is nothing that will give you the complete sequence. So there isn't. So for example, if you have one account with three transfer sites and five routes and what's not, there is no single ID that you will see everywhere. So you need to understand the structure of the database and the API in order to connect the dots. So if you have, so usually there will be either an account ID or a route ID or subscription ID in the other object, and they're named properly, but you don't have one that is completely linkable all the way through.
I see. And with that one, is there like a documentation for the on how the like a metadata for the API data you guys have? Do you have an information on that one where I can pull?
So the only documentation we have officially is the Swagger documentation, as you had seen it, that doesn't really have the level that you need. There is a class, I think it's free at the moment. So there is something in university team. And then way back when, back in 5.3, I wrote an article in community that was explaining how all of the objects fit together. It was with API 1.4 and not with API 2.0, but it doesn't matter, really. So if you look for onboarding, for the onboarding article I wrote, it actually explains what connects to what and how. But that's pretty much what we have. We are working on something, but I don't know when it will be ready. And then are you coming to Denver next week?
No, unfortunately, no.
Too bad. Ian, he's now on my team, but he used to be in training for a lot of years. But he's one of the sessions we have is start with your APIs. That will do something that will be basically an introduction of how to start with APIs and how the ST APIs connect to each other. I don't know if we'll be recording this session. I'm pretty sure I also have. So look at the list of the user groups, especially the ones from a few years ago. I think we did a group on APIs where I went through the different objects and how they connect to each other. I'll need to look through the list. Okay.
Well, okay. we are recording the sessions for next week, and so we can provide that out to you afterwards, and then send along the onboarding article that Annie mentioned, as well as past user groups that cover the topic.
I really appreciate that. Yeah, I'm trying to play with the ID for each of these reports. And it seems like, but I am not confident, like there's a certain length of your IDs that kind of match with all the reports, but I'm not confident that I am not pulling an invalid information for each customer. So,
yeah.
Thank you. So I will look into that.
Yep. Yes. So when it shows up, and then we'll have this meeting over and over, and I'll put a note on my calendar as well. So on one of the next Ask Annie's through the summer or, you know, spring, summer, whatever, we can revisit again. And if you want to bring what you already have or send me the questions beforehand, then we can look and we can go through that. Because I don't mind even bringing up the server as soon as it's back live and we can look into it, but it's just without having things ready to show, we'll spend the next half of an hour of me chasing and showing you ideas, while when I know what we're looking for, I can have things already opened and in place so that we can look through it. But yeah, but the base, but look at the onboarding article, because it was explaining the ideas and which ones belong to what. And another thing, keep in mind that those ideas might look very similar, but they're basically, they need to match exactly. The fact that they start with the same 10 characters means nothing. It's just how we generate them. They're complete, they're not random, but they're independent. So don't try to find, this one starts with the same 10 characters, so it's something the same. Nope, they're just ideas. And the good news is, because of how we generate ideas, you cannot have the same idea on different objects. So if you get the idea from a route, you will not have the same idea on an account, for example, or something like that. So.
Okay. All right, thank you. I will wait for that information.
Yep. And then, again, reach out with any questions you might have before that or after that, and we'll talk through it.
Will do. Thank you.
Okay. Hey, let's see if I can share my server again. So give me a second to see if I can rejoin from this line. I just rebooted my laptop over here. Let me see if you can see my browser. Yay, should be able to.
Yes, we see it.
Okay, Olga, you still around?
Yes, I'm still here, and I can see your screen.
So that's your use case that I was playing with, although this field is very, very small. So this is where basically you will want to do that expression we were talking about. And what you'll do is on the account attributes, if you call the var user email or whatever, then I'm checking, is it matching dot plus? That means, so matches dot plus and ed, back to what we're talking about, how to do empty. That's another way to check for empty. So dot plus means any characters at least once, which means that if it is an empty string, if this is not there, then this will fail. It will be false. But if it is an expression, it will be at least one. And the same thing we talked about earlier, how you check for empty, you can concat with ours, what's not. But check if this is empty. If it is, I'll move that to a place where you can see it better in a second. But you check if it is empty. So this will check, it will respond true if it is not empty. And then if it is not empty, use that one. Otherwise, use the account email. That way, if you have an account that doesn't have this expression, it will still use the account email. Okay. But if you always want to put it, you can do that. And let me see where I can put that so you can see it cleaner here, for example. So that's what it looks like. And I also can put it on chat now that I'm back.
Yes, please.
And again, I just wrote that. I'll get the screen back in a second. Here it is. And again, it might have some technical problems in this expression, you know, some brackets might not be the correct one, so you might need to clean it up a little bit. I literally just wrote this thing from scratch, so who knows what I messed up. But if you understand the idea, it should be cleanable.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much.
I can already see one problem. One of the brackets is wrong. But yeah, so but something like that. And this is, by the way, a good way to check when you have two different parameters that may or may not be holding information. It's not just for males, it can be for anything. That's the standard way to check. You check if one of them is empty. If it is not empty, then you put the return that one. Otherwise, you return whatever reserve value you have. You can do it that way or the other way around. Check for email instead of that one and so forth. Make sense?
Yes, it does. Thank you so much.
Yep. And again, if you don't, and that's the standard way to do it. And because all of those places are expressions, that works actually, right? Mm-hmm. But it doesn't work for ad hoc, because in ad hoc, everything is stuck with the email itself. So,
okay.
And Jess just put the links from the onboarding stuff, Maurita. that I wrote all those years ago. So if you look into that, it has some explanations about IDs and how you grab ID from one object to use in another, which you basically need the reversal, but it should give you an idea of what connect where.
Yeah, I see them. Thank you.
Yep. Okay, and I have my server back, by the way. So if we need to look at something, we can, at least for the time being. Okay, so what else do we have? I see one person that is happy that the meeting is late. This meeting time is working for them. So am I. You know, I'm not a morning person either, if you don't know it yet. So what else do we have? No questions? That will be a short meeting. No, no one has any questions. Jeff, you're doing okay over there? I haven't heard your voice yet.
I was gonna say Jeff's been quiet so far.
Which Jeff?
Yep.
You. You. Yeah.
I usually have something to say, but today I'm laying low. Laying low today.
Okay, well, it's a first on those meetings, although technically it's the half meeting because I already had half of the people on last week on the early morning meeting. So maybe that's what's going on.
Hey, Annie, okay. This is Danny with Blackhawk. I came on just I got on the meeting in time, but I got the invite from Ludo kind of late. So this is my first time joining these. So, I'll hope to join them more often, and then maybe I'll have some questions next time. I wasn't even sure what this was actually going to entail or how it was going to flow, but now that I have an idea, I'll work on some questions for next rounds.
Yeah, so the rule basically is if you know the questions beforehand and you send them over, what we were just talking with Maurita about, I can actually even look at something and have things prepared, but it's not a requirement.
Okay.
You can just show up and ask a question like most people do, and I see a hand up, so we have another question, so yay. But it's basically a question-answer session, and it doesn't matter what kind of question you have. If you want to ask me about the checkbox, we'll talk about the checkbox. If you want to ask me about architecture, gear, whatever, that's what we talk about. It's secure transport, any topic goes. If I don't know the answer, if it's findable through the server, we'll go look. If it's not, I'll tell you I don't know, and we'll try to brainstorm. Sometimes I don't know, but someone else on the meeting does.
Yeah, so. Okay, sounds good. I do know one of the things that we're looking at this year and going into next year is, because we're installed on our on-prem servers today, and we're looking to move to the cloud, so that's kind of where I'll be looking at, you know, as far as, you know, best practices to move up into the cloud. We'll be up into our own private cloud, but we got a big kind of project to move our systems up into the cloud. So that'll be one of them that we'll be focusing on here.
So the biggest thing you need to think about is where your data is. ST will move. That's not the problem. Your external partners will move, and it will actually be easier for them. They might need to adjust their firewalls to get you to your new servers and so on, but that's not the problem. But 99% of when cloud to a ground to cloud goes wrong is when people forget about their backend applications, because you're pulling the server out from your secure zone and you're putting it somewhere else, which means A, you cannot do folder monitors anymore because you are not sitting in the same network anymore. So you cannot attach the servers, which means you need to switch to Samba or you need to find a different way to get to that data. And B, all of those that used to be internal to internal connections, you might have had waivers from security because you're back in the secure zone. Those will disappear on you. So if you have, mainframe from 1973 or something that is still doing plain FTP, chances of your secure team allowing it to go all the way to the cloud that way are slim to none. right? So that's what you need to look at.
Okay. Yeah, I think for us, that part of it, we would probably be okay, because we, so far up to date now, we've used the folder monitor really just to monitor the files within. We use a lot of folder monitors, and I know that the advanced routing is a good way to go to handle a lot of that. So that's one of the things that we'll be looking at. But I think for us, we use, for our internal systems, we use SFTP to exchange our files, you know, between ST and our backend platform. So when we move into the cloud, I think as long as that routing is still allowed, we'll be okay. And then for the external partners, I think for the external partners, the idea was to use like the URL we have today. We would just, you know, when we're testing, and we have we'll be kind of looking at it as to the best way to do it, kind of similar to an earlier question on, you know, phased approach per partner kind of thing, or groups of partners and types, or if we just do it all. Because we recently did a migration to new servers on the on-prem arena. So it would be similar to, I think, to that process. It's just it would be up in the cloud. We just have to work through all the connectivity and everything. We should be good.
Yeah. As I said, it's usually the internal transfers people forget, because you're so used to them being next to you that you don't have security on them, you don't have firewalls on them, you don't have rules for them. And then you move and it's like, you're three levels away now. So someone needs to punch all of those holes now. And security is like, I cannot open all those ports for you.
Right.
And well, people get stuck. So that,
I do have another question, if it's okay, now that I'm getting the hang of this, how this is working. So one of the things that, so we have our different daemons, because we run our ST, on Linux, Red Hat. And so up so far, we've always just used, we got our SSL certs, and our HTTPS and our SSH, and AS2 are all using the SSL cert, to listen for the inbound traffic, that flows in. And so one of the questions that came up was, and due to the security and all the stuff that's been going on in the last few years, we are at a point where those certs get renewed every year. Which is fine, and our partners are used to that, and they know that, hey, it's gonna be a new cert, and they go through the accepting of it. Some systems are better than others as far as accepting that new cert, even if it's a renewed one. But the question I have is one of the things that came up was, like for SSH, it seems to be a little more problematic than the other protocols, as far as can we we can create our own SSL kind of cert to listen on, right? When we do these renews, we just won't be tied to that security SSL cert. Now, I don't know if our security will allow that, but that was one of the things I was thinking about.
Yes, you can, and you can even talk to them and see what they will allow. So for SSH, what is used with partners is the keys inside of the certificate. What we need for the daemon is the SSL part of it. But it doesn't need too much. So what you can do is to use the old private keys and assign them again every year with a new SSL wrapper, so that your security sees a new certificate, but the keys for the end users don't change. That doesn't work on the SSL protocols, because on the SSL protocols, the whole part of it works together. But it works on SSH, and support actually have either an article or a guide somewhere about that. But that's what I see on the field. So you use your SSL certificate, the official one, the one you pay for the SSL daemons, AS2, HTTP, FTP, if you have any, PSIP, if you have any. And then on the SSH, you put a self-signed certificate, because it doesn't matter unless your security throws a fit about it, because I've seen that as well. And then you just renew that, because it's a self-signed, you can keep the key and sign from outside, or it can even be signed properly from outside, as long as you extract the key and reuse it every time, so that for all intents and purposes, for your external SSH partners, it will look like you never change your certificate or your key, but it still satisfies the SSL repudiation thing. So.
That definitely, and that's the exchange I had with one of our backend folks that was asking about that, because they're because we're you know, I'm in, our servers are here in California, and one of, you know, setups is over in Ireland, and then they were asking about that. Well, hey, well, why don't you just use an SSH? So, and I had said that we would have to run past security to make sure, you know, that, you know, because there's some guidelines where we have to replace the certs, you know, and now it's every year. And we were just, we were kind of brainstorming through the best way to handle that. And I know, you know, and it looks like, Christopher Day, I posted something about security not allowing self-signed certs. So yeah, that's where we would have to do some checking on our end as well to make sure that that's something that they would allow. I think as long as we can show that, yes, it's changing and, you know, that kind of thing, we might be okay.
And that's why I keep saying, talk to your security of what actually is the rule in your company, because our SSH server is a little unusual because all it requires is the SSH keys, but we need the cert because of how the server is built. And it has to do a lot of history and the fact that we try to keep it the same as the others and so on. So most SSH servers on the market don't have an SSL cert on them. They just have keys, which is the norm. When ours was built, it was built with a cert on top of it. Maybe that might be worth adding an idea over on the ideas portal about dissociating, changing that going forward, but it will require a huge rewrite on the server. It's just how it's built, unfortunately.
Okay. So well, thank you very much for that.
That's what it is.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Okay.
William, you've been very patient.
William, yep, I know. William, thank you for being patient,
Annie.
And that's you now.
Yes, hi, Annie. After having set up an account management application for notifying users of their expiring SSH keys, I was able to modify the mail template for you know, for branding purposes. But I find that the variable at the very bottom of the mailing template, which is, pulls in the contents, I couldn't find a JSON file that contained the wording of it. So is there a way to modify that?
Not on this one. So for the ones that just put a variable inside of the template, they are hard coded in the Java code, basically.
Okay, I see. Okay, I was suspecting that, but I wanted to make sure that there was no place else I could.
Unfortunately, they had been looking into it to try to move them out, but unfortunately, the way they build those strings is. So every time when you see just a variable that contains multiple things, those are not configurable anywhere. You can configure the XHTML as much as you want. You can add more things. You obviously found that.
Yes.
But if they're calling a variable, the variable is what the variable is, unfortunately. Now
it is what it is. Okay.
It is. Now, there are a couple of things you might be able to do on some others, but not on this one. For example, if it is a routing-based one, now that we have the new step that allows you to add additional flow parameters, you can actually build your own flow parameter with whatever string you want, and then use that in the mail instead. But that doesn't apply to sending notifications for certificates and so on, because they have a routing. So we are working on things slowly, obviously, but it just takes forever. And for this one, it's not even a pattern base. They basically created the string inside of Java, and throwing it out. So it cannot be translated, which is a big problem in Europe, for example.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they are looking into changing things, but just like the list of files when we send ad hoc notification that you have 10 files to download or something like that, those just come as they are. And they are not parsable, changeable, updatable. It's just how it was built.
Okay.
So unfortunately.
Thank you.
Thank you
very much for that. No problem.
However, if you need to add more things to that message, you can add it directly into the XHTML, and you found that already, I suspect. So cannot change what the message itself says, but you can work around that by adding more information in the template.
I see. Okay. Right.
Makes sense? Okay.
Yes. Thank you very much.
Yeah, because you can use any variable over there, and you can also use any strings. So if you just type a message, you know, contact you know, contact William for all I care.
Under the variable. Contact. Yes, okay, got it. Very good.
Under it, above it, around it. You know, you can do whatever fancy thing you want. The only thing I will warn you is if you're going too fancy with colors and so on, they won't work in most clients. So don't do that. Mm-hmm. Just because male clients can be stupid sometimes. And honestly, right, creating a new, a very beautiful mail that works both on web mail-based mails and text mails and Outlook is almost impossible. That's why we have this basic looking pattern, but you can add as much information as you want in there.
So, sounds good.
Yep. Okay.
Great. Thank you.
Okay. Well, and Jeff, you have a question. So big application backends is changing from IBM Broker to EKS. Yay, finally. Everything is AWS. Any issues foreseen with such a move? I suspect that, sorry, I need to read that. So all our apps are within our AWS cloud on various EC2s. Any issues foreseen with such a move? I suspect having everything within the VPC should be helpful.
So, boy, what a babbling question Jeff has. That is,
You are moving everything. So everything will be in AWS?
Everything is already there, including this, you know, the IBM broker, but we're getting rid of that. And we're already feeding in from EKS, but they're much smaller volume. Now we're going to be feeding in and picking up tons of stuff. You know, we're really increasing that volume tremendously. So there, you know, I guess all kinds of combos with EKS, workers, nodes, and so on need to really be, you know, played with quite a bit until we get a nice flow. What do you think?
The one thing I'll be very careful about is not to allow too many files to end up in the same folder or same server for and us to try to pull them at the same time. Mm-hmm. You know, the 10,000 the files problem. SP is a lot better than it used to be, but still that's what can kill us and make us unstable. And the other thing is when you change from one application to another and one manager to another in a way, you might see a shifting of the patterns and peaks and how data is coming and when it's coming and what's getting processed when. So you might need to do some performance changes to account for that.
Right.
Right. Because if the broker could, for example, if the IBM broker couldn't do more than 6 files per time, you know, 6 threads, whatever, and now EKS can do 25, ST is okay usually with a number, but your configuration is set for the old world and you have also other traffic going on. So it's not about, so I'm not that much worried about the move from one product to another.
Right, right.
It's that if the pattern changes, if the way files are coming changes, you might need to do something around it to protect ST.
Okay. Yeah, not right now, it looks like, you know, early tests, their outbound, which is much higher volume, is going okay. And the inbound, like when a customer drops off and ST then puts it in the folder that the broker was picking up, now it's going to be EKS is picking up. They seem to be a little bit slower, which is kind of weird because it's going through the same, you know, VPC and everything, but I think it's more on the application side with getting the right combo configured, you know, because it's SD's taking stuff and zipping it right to where it needs to go. And then EKS needs to come in and pick up all that stuff and suck it in and do its application thing. That piece is a little bit slow right now, but they seem to be getting it better. So I would think it's really on our application side, just getting that adjusted properly.
Yeah, my gut feeling is that either they're coming with less threads or with smaller threads, with smaller buffers or something compared to, and that's what I was talking about. It's not really about the data per se. It's you have moving parts and you're changing one of them. right?
Right.
And especially because the way ST is configured had been based on the IBM broker details and how it was working. So if EKS changes that or requires smaller windows or what's not, you might need to adjust it on the ST side.
Yeah, yeah. And you just said something that clicked when you said less threads. I've heard them talking about that, you know, adjusting, yeah, you know, with that. So I'll report back. That's pretty good for now. That's what I need. Thank you.
Yeah, it's the same conversation you'll always have when you change the partner, when they change something on mm-hmm. their side. Mm-hmm. It's the same volume of data, it's the same number of files, but the way they're sending them and the speed and the thresholds and so on changes, which will change everything. So if mm-hmm. they're picking up slower, I would say that something on their side is just not coming fast enough to ST, because nothing changed on ST. You have the files in
exactly
place, and that step haven't changed. But now, but if the broker was coming with 10 connections and then getting the files within the 10 connections without closing, reopening, and what's not,
yep,
that will be a lot faster than if EKS is opening 5 connections only and closes after every file to come for another one, how ST works usually, right? So it's the details.
That's exactly what I wanted to hear. And that confirms, you know, that confirms some thoughts over here. Okay, yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Annie.
One thing I would check, by the way, is don't look at how long it takes for the whole job to finish from the beginning to end, but just look at the transfers only and calculate the timing there. Not mm-hmm. per transfer, but for all of them, for example, within an hour in the old and the new way, and see if that is also slower. Because if this is slower, what it's going to tell you is that either you have oversaturation in the network, or there is a latency slowness or something between whatever EKS is and ST is, and you might need to look into that and see what
and channels are. Yes, and sometimes the application doesn't let you know that they're also doing something else from an application yeah. perspective that now is coming to the forefront. So I'm good. Thank you very much.
Yep. I don't like applications doing multiple things. Part of the reason why I like ST pushing the data out as opposed to just us staging the files and someone else coming is that we control when the files go, right, as opposed to us sitting and waiting and then someone coming from outside with hundreds of connections and complaining, but it's slow. Well, yeah, because you're trying to download 100 files from the same folder at the same time. And that's another thing, especially if the files sit longer in the folder, that will mean that you have more files in the same folder for a longer time. So when someone tries to read it, all the responses on list and so on will be slightly slower because there is more data there, right? The way OSs work, everything works like that. The more files you have in the same folder, the slower the access to the folder becomes. So you might want to look at that as well.
Thank you.
Okay.
It's a lot better this week than it was last week. So that's good. So we're going in the right direction.
Yep. And yep. Honestly, you'll step somewhere weirdly and then you'll need to come back and fix it again. But it's what it is. When you have a lot of data moving between two applications and two channels, so you just need to adjust on both sides. And from mm-hmm. the sounds of it, I'm not saying you cannot adjust things in ST as well, obviously. But from the sounds of it, EKS just need to pick up their game.
That's right. It's not on the S. My conclusion thus far, it's not any problem with ST. It's on the EKS side. Thank you. I got to run to a 2 o'clock meeting. So thank you very much, Annie.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other questions? Well, if no one has a question, we're done in an hour, which a little surprising, but not much, because we had another hour late last week with the other half of the people. So thanks, everyone, for joining us. So logistically, next month will be a single meeting at the regular hours. Then in June, We're doing the double meeting early, late again. We're still testing all this. So we will appreciate any feedback on the timing and does this timing work for you and so on and so forth. I like the split meeting simply because it gets more chances to people to come into the meeting, but it also obviously cannot run for 90 minutes every time because we don't have that many people. So last call for questions before I get it back to Jeff. Yeah, Olga, look for the other meeting as well. So I had last Thursday, it's 3 hours earlier than this one, which might be better for you.
Yeah, we're experimenting with some times that are more EMEA friendly and North America friendly rather than just one time for both.
So as I said, the one next month will be the regular time that is geared to everyone, but then in June we'll again have the two meetings, one at 3 hours earlier than this one, and then this one for the West Coast on the United States and US in general. So okay.
So the normal time is 7 a.m. Pacific usually?
Yes, it's 7 a.m. Okay. Pacific on the regular time. It's basically 5 p.m. France. That's what we're targeting. And this was used to be our regular window for almost 3 years, more than 3 years we're doing those. So we're experimenting a little bit. Because you're Pacific, you'll have the regular, but also every second month we'll have this late one, at least for now. And after a few months, we'll make a decision of what we're doing. We're just trying to help everyone based on time zones because it's a big world. And if you have, by the way, if you have APAC offices and someone on the other end of the world, I also have quarterly meeting with APAC basically at 7 p.m. my time. So there is also another meeting for if you are all the way at the other end of the world. But we're trying to cover the globe.
Yeah. It's hard to find a single time that works across the globe.
And I mean, we had Olga in South Africa and we have the West Coast of the United States, and that's a huge span of time zones. So okay, so back to Jeff. Thanks everyone for joining.
Thanks a lot, everybody. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Annie. Just a couple of concluding remarks. I just want to highlight about Activate Community and everything that's on the site in terms of the ideas portals that Annie was mentioning. We have the user group calendar, both what's coming up as well as recordings of past sessions, product roadmaps. ST is obviously featured. And then, what's near and dear to community is just an open on-demand discussion forum. So please take a look at that. One thing new that we started last year was about having what's new videos on secure transport and other products. We have a YouTube channel for it, and it's really just a 3 to 5 minutes. They're short videos about the latest update on the product and some things to highlight. So take a look at that, and again, we'll provide these slides out. And then one last thing is, welcome reviews. G2 is a site that many use when they're about evaluating a technology product. So you're feel free to leave a review about secure transport or any other Axe-based solution that you use. Thank you again for being here. We very much appreciate it. Thank you, Annie. And hope you all have a great rest of your day. And we'll see you next time.
Thanks, everyone. I hope I'll see some of you in Denver. Come say hi. I'll be there.
Thank you.
Have a good day. Bye-bye.
Thanks, guys.
Good day, everyone. Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.